This podcast is proud to be part of the TalkSport Fan Network. TalkSport. Powered by fans.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here, and it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
The TalkSport Fan Network is proudly supported by McDelivery, bringing you the food you know you love. McDelivery brings a top-tier lineup of food right to your door. No matter the result, unlike the Owls, you'll always be winning with McDelivery. So there's only one thing left to say, what's everybody having? Order now on the McDonald's app and you can also get rewards points delivered too, so that ordering today means you'll get some tasty rewards later on. And between you and me, if you order just before kick-off, you can get it just in time for half-time, but I've not told you that. Only via the app at participating restaurants, 18 plus rewards registration required. Points only on menu items, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com. See you later.
This podcast is proud to be part of the TalkSport Fan Network. TalkSport. Powered by fans.
It's a goal! What a goal! It's absolutely world-class from Marcus Tudge!
Johnson puts it in the air. Aidan Flynn wins the goal!
It's
the
It's still with Lee Gregory. He's in the box. Tries to screw him. Is it going to be there?
Yes! Yes!
Oh, my God!
The Wednesday Week!
Hello, good evening, and welcome to a very special episode of the Wednesday... I forgot the name of the show. That's a great start, isn't it? The Wednesday Week Owls Alumni Edition. And as you can see in the larger window that we've... because it's a lot prettier than Stevie and I, we've got hat-trick hero two times, Mr. Neil Mellor. And also, by the way, Neil, I don't know if you know this, but there was a game in 2004 called LMA Manager. It was up there with Championship Manager and Footy Manager, and you were like a cheat code on it. You were, I don't know if you're aware, but you were like rate good, and me and my pals used to argue who was getting you or Jose Antonio Reyes. So that's nice, isn't it? How's it going, Mel? You all right?
I was better on the computer. No, thanks for having me on, lads.
No, I tell you what though, the season that we had was the one where you just broken through at Liverpool, so you weren't too shabby. So listen, Mel, we're going to spend the next hour chewing through a few career highlights and your time at some other clubs that you might have played for. But, you know, we're going to keep it mainly Sheffield Wednesday centric. So, you know, I'm going to kick it off, actually. I mean, talking about, you know, I want to say you were born in Sheffield, and then did you make the move over to the Northwest because someone told you to, or is that just the way that that it went?
Yeah, born in Sheffield, Jessop's Hospital. That's where I was born, a twin. Photographer Steve, who's still going strong at the Owls now, he took a photo of me, very first photo with my odd man and obviously my mum. So, going back to 1982 it was. At the age of five, so we were brought up in Chapeltown in Sheffield. And then at the age of five, that was when my dad decided it was time to move back over the Pennines. And that's when we settled in Sale. So that was where he was originally from anyway, but he did love his time in Sheffield.
Go on then, Stevie. I'll let you go into the olden days, and let's just get straight into it.
So, obviously, do you feel like when you were sort of we fast forward straight into the sort of the Sheffield Wednesday aspect of things? Do you feel like when the opportunity first arose, did you have any sort of affinity for the club, or you know, being with your dad being obviously an ex-Wednesday player, was it something that you talked about with him previously before anything had arisen? Did you seek out any sort of advice or guidance in terms of was this the right thing for you to do, or was it just a bit of a whim and you just went, right, I'm going to go for it?
No, I mean, Wednesday means a lot to the family. Obviously, my dad had been there before I was born. It was part of the Boxing Day Massacre, of course, 79. So he'd always told me about the stories. I've seen the pictures, seen the footage, seen the goal, in fact, a little bit blurry. But and the fact that my older brother as well, who I was always been close with, He's 8 years older. He's been a big Wednesdayite. So he's followed Wednesday everywhere. I've seen the posters of sort of all the 90 glory days, all the Wednesday players then. I've been to Sheffield Wednesday games. So Sheffield Wednesday was a football club that meant so much to the family. And I knew if I ever made it, you know, I'd love to experience playing there one day. And it's funny because when I was at Liverpool, Neil Warnock used to ring my dad all the time. He was Sheffield United manager at the time. He was like, oh, bring your Neil over to Sheffield United. And I just said, Dad, I can't sign for Sheffield United. I just can't. So, that was a chance maybe to have gone to Sheffield United, but I never wanted to. But I knew maybe one day I might go to Sheffield Wednesday. And when it came, I had the choice out of a couple of Championship clubs or Sheffield Wednesday. And they were in League One at the time. So the draw was Sheffield Wednesday, but also Alan Irvine, I have to say that. He was a brilliant coach, best I ever experienced. And I wanted to team up with him again. And it just fit to go to Wednesday.
I love the idea that you signing for Sheffield Wednesday pissed off Neil Warnock. Big fan of that, Neil. Big
fan. Honestly, he must have rung for about 6 months. Come and sign for us. He had about 8 strikers at the time. I was thinking the fact he had 8 strikers and the fact it was Sheffield United and not Sheffield Wednesday was a factor why I never went there.
Brilliant. So in terms of that move coming about, was it a case of Alan Irvine just getting on the phone with an opportunity just coming up Wednesday? There's a chance for you here to get yourself some match fitness coming up a year with us. How did that sort of loan move come about?
Yeah, well, I was at Preston at the time and they were still a Championship club and Darren Ferguson had come in and I had 2 years left on my contract. And Ferguson, for whatever reason, decided that he didn't want me part of his plans. I was involved in 45 of the 46 Championship games the previous season. And he said to me, just before the last game, Reading away, you're not involved. You're not part of my plans next season. I was like, I've been involved for every game this season. It's just nice to have on the CV that I could have been all games this season. I was available for, I wasn't on the pitch for every game. Unused sub, as some strikers are for a few. So Ferguson didn't fancy me. And I thought, okay, fine. Well, let's see what the options are. And there was a couple in the Championship. But Irvine was sort of sniffing about. And I thought, Sheffield Wednesday, Alan Irvine, let's do it. I did 2 days of pre-season at Preston and that was when I thought, nah, I need to get over there to Alan Irvine because his pre-seasons were tough. And I thought, I need to get his pre-season because I know that will help me for the season.
That's interesting. Did you feel like Alan Irvine kind of deployed you in the right way? Because obviously now as football's moved on, we now know more about what different, you know, you're not just a striker anymore. You're now a back-to-goal striker or a forward or you're holding up the ball and all the rest of it. Did you feel that Irvine kind of deployed you as you preferred?
Well, I think the thing about Alan Irvine was, and I know some fans will have their own opinion, of course, I loved the environment he created. So every training session I enjoyed. I felt as though I improved as a player. I felt as though I learned a little bit more about football as well. He was so studious about the opposition. I felt as though we were really well prepared for whatever game we were going into. And yeah, he liked me, put me on the pitch more often than not. So a lot of the times we played 4-4-2 and I knew what I had to do. He told me what I had to do with the ball, without the ball. And as a coach, he was absolutely brilliant the way he spoke to me. So I really enjoyed my time. And not just at Sheffield Wednesday, but at Preston as well. I always felt as though he was harshly treated because at Preston, we got in the playoffs. He got pinned off when we were 2 points off the playoffs. Then at Sheffield Wednesday, we were just hovering outside the playoffs. The Mandarich takeover took over, came in, and obviously he wanted his own man in there. I thought West Brom, he never got them in the bottom three in the Premier League. Again, I thought he did well there, Norwich. So for me, I've always followed Alan Irvine. I thought he's done really well, but maybe harshly treated.
Do you think that was it? He's not just at Wednesday, but you've sort of alluded to it there. So I suppose I'm asking you a question that you've already answered, but it's that over-expectation, isn't it, of a setup at a club that we're thinking that it doesn't matter how well you're doing, we want more. And it just sort of leads me into that the next point, going back to Wednesday, where we were. Do you think it was, you're doing all right, but we can probably get a little bit better? And that was a reason that we sort of moved on from him.
Maybe. There was a lot of change. Do you know what? Off the pitch, it wasn't easy because the administration talk was going on. The fact that Mandarić came on, it was really unsettling with the players. They were all talking about, are we going to get paid? There was a lot of that talk going on. You could see how unsettling it was at the time. I was on loan from Preston, so it didn't really affect me. But a lot of the players, it was a real, real big issue. But expectation's a big thing. Any team that gets relegated, they're expected, got to be in the top three or four. And if they're not, that's when the pressure comes. And to be fair, at Wednesday, we had a couple of bad results that year, in all fairness. But I don't think it helped at Christmas, because remember, I think the pipes had burst at Hillsborough. There was some kind of leak and we couldn't have a couple of games. And we felt like, so we could have got a couple of games in there just to put ourselves back in the sort of the playoffs. Never had it. And I think the league table were about seventh or eighth. And if your expectation is top three, you're seventh or eighth, that's when the pressure starts building.
Sorry, I absolutely forgot what I was doing. I'm doing really badly here tonight, aren't I? The Mandarich coming in, we look back on now, and you know, a lot, the way that the club's being run right now and the way some of the fans feel about it has probably got a lot to do with this. We look back on it now and feel like, you know, that was some kind of halcyon days in the last 15 years that we've had. But do you remember your debut? Because I remember it. I think I want to say it was away at Dagenham and Redbridge. I think it was like,
I'll tell you, Dagenham and Redbridge away, Gary Megson left me on the bench as an unused sub, and I just watched the worst game of football I've ever watched. It was 0-0. I don't know what time of the season it was. It must have been like February, March time. The pitch was like a car park. It was rock hard. It wasn't fit to play. And I was just like, good, I don't even want to be out there. And Megson was never going to put me on anyway. So the away game was 0-0. But yes, my debut was at home to Dagenham and Redbridge.
It was at home. Right.
I was fuming, because for me in pre-season, it's about getting through it. I'd scored four at Stocksbridge on my first game for Wednesday, and the Wednesday fans were thinking, hello, he can score a few goals. Probably didn't score many more in pre-season. I think we played Donny away last pre-season game, and Clinton Morrison scored, and he put Clinton ahead of me first game of the season. And I was fuming. I was like, what are you doing? Because I came in to be the main striker, so he put me on the bench. Tudgame may have started the game as well. And I came off the bench. We won 2-0, but I never scored. But I was fuming that I never started that game.
I tell you what, it's nice having you talk about all these players now that we hold in high regard. Now we'll look back. I'd love to have Clinton and Tully back in with Mels. You know what I mean? I like that jostling for position. Come on, Steve.
What was your relationship like with Clinton?
I like Clinton, and even to today, we get on. I think the thing for Clinton was he wasn't the player he was earlier on in his career. I mean, Clinton at Palace was a top centre forward and scored loads of goals, but at Sheffield Wednesday, he was a different sort of centre forward. He didn't have the same pace. He didn't score the same goals, but he still had that voice in the dressing room. He was a massive character. He really was. And if he wasn't starting, he would sulk. And the problem was, I was starting ahead of him. I was like, Clinton, I'm starting. But do you know what? He was a good lad. He was a good lad, but he wasn't the same player at Wednesday as what he was earlier on in his career. I scored the next game. My next game was when I got my first goal away at Colchester. I was on the bench again. Irvine never put me in, did he, for the first couple of games?
You've come all that way to meet up with your old pal, and he's not even giving you a...
I love Alan Irvine, but he's not going to play me.
When are you going to start me? To be fair, the goal I scored at Colchester was one of the best goals for Wednesday, that, because my old man had gone to watch. It was new stadium, Colchester. I don't even know how good a side Colchester were back then, but we were 1-0 down. I've come off the bench. I've probably posted it on my social media the odd time. I think it was in the black kit. I've headed it past one defender. Yeah. I've held one off. I've held another off. Headed it again and just powered it into the back of the net. And what I loved about the goal was it was in front of the travelling Wednesday fans, and they're all jumping on the pitch. And that was a nice moment to share with them. So, I enjoyed that one.
What was the changing room? We've touched on Morrison. Were there any big characters in and around it? Was it a good atmosphere? I know we've talked about the fact that it wasn't necessarily the safest or the most sort of steady in terms of talk about administration, the changeover in terms of the takeover with Mandarich coming in, but as a group of lads, when we do these, we always like to sort of speak to players about any of the big characters, any of the banter that was going on, the things that sort of happened behind closed doors. What was that changing room atmosphere like at the time?
Good, really good. Obviously, Clint was really close with, remember Giles Coke, who decided to take a penalty at the Kop end and score with his right foot. And then the ref said, you've got to retake it for whatever reason, and took it with his left foot and blazed it into the Kop. It's like, what are you doing? Changing you. Anyway. That was to an absolute tear. I forget what game it was, but he was best mates with him, Daniel Jones as well. Them three were really tight. You had your youngsters like your Beeves, O'Donnell, and Spursy. They were all tight, like, and Bods. They were all like, there was three or four of them that were just like little kids. You just proper immature, but fine. You could sort of control that. But then the senior boys, I mean, the dressing room under Irvine was great. We had Weaves in goal. We had Chris Sedgwick. We had Tommy Miller. I was part of it. Darren Potter. We had Teeley. It was Darren Purse was there as well. It was a really strong, well-run dressing room, and results weren't that bad. But when Gary Megson came in, the administration, there was loan players coming in, there was this player coming in. I think we had about 9 loan players. I wasn't even in squads under Gary Megson because we had too many loan players in the squads, and he was like, well, you can't be on the bench. I was like, what do you mean I can't be on the bench? He was like, we've got 6 loan players and you're one that's going to miss out. I was like, oh, right, okay, fine. So it became, the dressing room was not good at all when all these players started to come in and all that change was happening. But to start with, some of them characters like Weaves and Sedgwick, top lads.
What was his justification for saying that even though we've got all these loan players, you're not going to be involved because you were scoring goals and
top scorer, he's put me on the bench. I think it was because, obviously, I don't know if he was bringing players in or Mandarich, whoever it was, it was their players. You know, he inherited me. So it wasn't like I was his player. So he clearly didn't fancy me early on. Even though his first game, I remember it was MK Dons at home. And I think he'd been announced the day before on the Friday. Gary Megson's a new manager, Sheffield Wednesday. So I was like, yeah, great. Because, okay, good player back in his day, decent manager. And he played with me, old man. I think he'd been at Wednesday with me, old man.
Yeah, yeah.
So I was thinking, right, he's going to have me here. Anyway, first game, right, I'm not getting involved. He does his press conference. I'm not getting involved. Rob Kelly, the assistant manager, is going to take the game. And I'm on the bench. I'm like, flipping heck. Whenever Rob Kelly took over at Preston as interim, when Irvine went, I was put on the bench. And he'd done it again. I was like, what are you doing putting me on the bench? MK Dons at home. Scored a hat-trick against them earlier on in the season. Anyway, we were 2-0 down. Megson was sat in the director's box 5 minutes into the game. He's on the touchline. He's dismissed Rob Kelly. And I'm in charge here. And we're on the bench thinking, we're taking over. Anyway, sure enough, he's barking out his instructions from the touchline. And he's looking at the bench. He's looking at me going, what are you doing on the bench? I went, I'm scoring. He brought me on at half time and I scored the equaliser. So I was like, buzzing, I'm gonna be in for Megson then. And the next game was Rochdale away, and he did something on shape on the Friday afternoon. But right, we're playing 3-5-2 tomorrow. And everyone's like, we've not played 3-5-2 all season. So when this is the system we're gonna play. Daniel Jones, left wing back, he thought he was Gareth Bale. And he's our outlet. And brilliant. Honestly, it's Friday afternoon. We're absolutely brilliant. But it was 11v nobody. So we're scoring goals for fun and switching the play and everything. So we went to Rochdale. And Wednesday going to Rochdale, we took 2,000 fans there. We're expecting to batter them. 1-0 down after about 5 minutes. Daniel Jones is getting absolutely run ragged down on that right-hand side for them, our left-hand side. Short corner, right on the stroke of half-time. Megson's got me going back for corners. Don't know why. I brought this lad down. I'm not even sure it was a foul or penalty given. And so they score 2-0 on half-time. So Megson, for 10 minutes of the half-time, just started laying into me, saying, oh, you've cost us the game, you've cost. What are you doing making that challenge? You've cost us the game. And I've gone, we've got second half to go. It's fine. And he's gone, no, you're coming off. And he's brought me off at half-time. I was like, what are you doing bringing me off? He brought big Gary Medine on. So Medine had signed by then. And he got a goal back into the game and finished 2-1. After that, he dropped me for 10 games. Never played for Megson. I think he absorbed one game after that because I gave a pen away at Rochdale. I wasn't his favourite after that.
That's really interesting, that, because, like, you know, some players talk quite fondly of their time under Gary Megson, especially when we're doing this show. There's people who are in that first. It was kind of our first season, wasn't it, in League One, 2010 to 2011, wasn't it? There was a lot of change happening at the club, and we had some big characters there. You know, you mentioned Giles Coke and Clinton Morrison. I remember, you know, Twitter was just a big thing at the time, and I think the first season of Top Boy had just come out, and Giles Coke had tweeted something like, really enjoyed Top Boy. And Clinton Morrison had just gone, shut up, man. You don't know about them things. Oh, that's how I read it. You know what I mean? Like, I did the voice. I was living in Croydon at the time. I was learning it. You know what I mean? So I tell you what, let's go back a bit even further than Mel's.
Let me just say, I don't dislike Megson. I did for the time I was on the bench, and I was unused sub at Carlisle, unused sub at Bournemouth, unused sub at Dagenham and Redbridge. Yeah, I was thinking, what are you doing? But then he got me in the team. He was under pressure, you see. So then he got me in the team, and I finished the season really strongly. I grew to really like him. And so it was a difficult decision then when I didn't sign back at Wednesday.
I can imagine.
But I did grow to really like him. But for 10 games, I was like, what is he doing? I'm top
scorer. I've had gaffers like that, to be fair, Mills.
Yeah, I think the thing with Megson, when we talk to whether it be ex-players or whoever, there's always, or when we're doing any sort of anything when we record and we're talking about managerial or a manager moves out and people talk about who we're going to get in, is the go-to. It's always, right, get Megson in, get him up Grenner Woods, let's get him up the back of the cop and we'll do all of that. And there was a real...
He done that Friday afternoon, he took us to the top of the cop, it was brilliant. And then we did 50-50 tackles on a Friday afternoon. Right, who wants to win that tackle? And I was with JJ. Remember JJ, winger JJ?
And me and him,
I ain't tackling you. You're not tackling me. I don't want to be injured for tomorrow. But the centre halves were beaming into each other. I was thinking, well, I mean, this is like training the day before. But that was Megs. And we grew to understand what he was all about. In fact, he gave one of the best team talks I've ever heard. It was one of his early games. It was Tranmere away. I was on the bench again. And brilliant team talk. He was giving it everything about your family, the most important thing. You've got all the Wednesday fans out there. And I was desperate to go. I was thinking, oh, I really want to go out and play. And I was on the bench. And it was the most inspiring team talk I've ever heard. It was absolutely brilliant. It really was. We lost 4-0 that night, but
totally worth it, though. Yeah, should have saved that.
And he never mentioned family again.
Did you get to play in any derbies, Mels? Did you? I'm going back because we were League One at the time, and then it was the following season after we just went up. So you might have just missed them.
Yeah, no, I miss playing against Sheffield United. I had a good record scoring against them as well. Scored against them for Liverpool, scored against them for Preston. So I probably would have scored against them for Sheffield Wednesday. But never got to play against them for Wednesday.
Would have enjoyed that. Now, listen, there's something I want to talk about now. So we're talking, I think it was Hartlepool, the first hat trick, wasn't it? That was the first one. Now, annoyingly, no footage exists of those three goals. I can seem to find on the internet. But then I think it was about, what, 10 days later?
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot. We charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
We all know away days are mint, but there's nothing quite like playing at home. Same goes for McDonald's. Maximize your home ground advantage with McDelivery. You in? Order now with the McDonald's app. At participating restaurants, 18 plus, serving times, delivery fee and terms apply. For more information, see mcdonalds.com. See you later. Is that what it was?
I have got the footage. I will DM you then. I've got that footage.
I'm gonna need that footage, but I've got this one. I'm just going to apologise to our audio listeners because that was probably a weird minute for them while they're driving in the car. So, but listen, I just wanted to show you them back because, you know, a hat-trick of headers don't happen very much, right? And, you know, you've got a lot to thank that goalkeeper for on that second one, though, aren't you? Like, you know what I mean?
Keep them low, Eddie.
They all count.
Yeah, I should have said that one. But we won 4-1 that day. I made the other one as well. I crossed it, and it was an own goal, so I should have got an assist for that as well. It was a good day. Good day. I mean, I enjoyed that. My brother's fuming because my brother followed me home and away for a lot of my career. Like I say, big Wednesday. He never went to that game, and I'd scored. He was absolutely fuming. But yeah, I enjoyed that. And unique. You know, let's be honest, I've got a really small forehead, so I didn't really win many headers. And it was nice to score a hat-trick. So yeah, it was a good one, that.
Now, I tell you why I've put that aside there, because there was, you know, one of my favourite things is just the way footballers interact. You know, the dressing room humour. You know, Stevie and I have played at some terrible low levels, but being in my early 40s now, that's what I miss. You know, like even at the highest level, you still get blokes kicking the ball right hard at each other while they're trying to lace up the boots and stuff like that. But my favourite one was stuff like nicknames. And I remember after that game, you got given the match ball and everybody signs it. And I remember spying in the daily. Have you got it? Is that the one that says Chunky on it? Because what's written? Is that the one or is it the other one?
There you go. So audio listeners won't be able to hear it. But there you go. Can you see it?
Yeah, it says, well done, Chunky. Who was that?
It was... I can't even get my angles right.
Look at that.
Have you got it? Not flipping out.
Yeah, it's just at the right hand side of where it says.
Got it. You can see it there.
I remember spying it in the paper, thinking, "Oh, was that your nickname for a while, Mels, or did you get many?"
No one ever called it me. And I'll tell you who did it. The lad who had the smallest arms in the squad, Lewis Buxton. I don't know what. He obviously knew what he was doing with where he's put it. And I've been interviewed. I've not even seen it. I've not even got onto it. What happens is, obviously, I didn't score many hat-tricks, but the ball just goes around the dressing room. Everyone signs it. Well done, Mels, whatever. And he's put, well done, Chunky. And I only knew after people were caning me because it was on the telly. I never knew it.
I don't know why it stuck out to me. So with any more nicknames that, you know, this, I'm going to give you an opportunity now to get your own back and just start to say, well, we used to call Lewis Buxton, you know, potato head or something like that. You know what I mean?
Yeah, dinosaur arms, still T-Rex. I mean, there wasn't that many bad nicknames then.
Yeah, I mean, you were there with Mickey Gray at that point, weren't you, as well? Did you miss him?
Mickey was before me. Franny, I think they were the team before me. Yeah.
I'm trying to think. I know there was an overlap with Danny Jones. I'm trying to think of Kits and, you know, I've just realised it's 14 years ago, Steve. You're going to have to get me out of this hole, pal.
The ones, and obviously, because it is a while ago, you go back and you're having a look, and I was sort of taken because some of the players that you played with in that season are either cult heroes or they're lambasted. So forgive me, I've done a quick Wikipedia. I can remember JJ because JJ was an absolute maverick, but the one that gets derided was John Otsemabor, who gets my God, he gets some honor. So and I think it's quite unjust, to be fair, because I don't have any lasting memories of him being an absolutely terrible player. But if you ever see a worst 11 Wednesday lineup, his name comes up for fun. And I mean,
bear in mind, Mels, this is somebody you probably played with a younger level as well. He was at Liverpool, wasn't he? And then he got shot in the arse at some point, didn't he, as well? Like, you know what I mean? That's going to hamper someone's footballing ability, isn't it?
I played with Semi in the youth team at Liverpool. He was a centre-half. He moved out to right-back. I went on loan to West Ham. That was when he got shot in the arse. It was a ricochet, told me.
They all said that.
Yeah, I mean, for me, so when we looked around the team in the dressing room, we trusted Semi at right-back, no doubt about that, yeah? Mm-hmm. So he was quick. He could defend. He could get forward. He could deliver the ball. So, if Wednesday fans have got that opinion, then fine. But for me, no, I liked Semi in the team. No problem.
There was how was JJ? Because he's the one. Jermaine Johnson is the one. He was either a 10 or a 2.
Yeah. Absolute maverick. He'd frustrate me because sometimes he wouldn't pass to me, and then he would pass to me. He'd beat four players and then shoot miles over, and you think he'd just square the ball. I'll tell you what he did. He got the fans involved and he created a bit of momentum, a noise inside the stadium, which was great.
Yeah, there was a couple of times where he smashed up. I think it was Richard Cresswell that used to play for us back in the late 90s, and we were playing Sheffield United. And I think Didn't JJ smash his face up? Did he not headbutt him or something? Do you remember that, Stevie? I'm going back.
It's going back a number of years.
Yeah. There. So listen, Mels, let's get into the team that you played with as well. Let's talk about who had the worst dress sense around your around the dressing room, because I know what you footballers are like. You like to be unique when you're out in town. Who looked like, you know, you're like, really? You know, that's your going out gear?
Yeah, well, I'm not going to say Sedge or Weeds because they'll just come back and absolutely cane me. Ginge, O'Connor looked like he dressed as a 60-year-old man. probably over the age as well. But he was like the one with a little bit of discipline in the dressing room. Daniel Jones, absolutely awful. He had
the boy band haircut as well at this point, didn't he?
Yeah, and because he was quick, he honestly thought he was like Gareth Bale. Everyone was like, you can't control the ball, so you're not. To be honest, DJ was sound. He was sound. But no, we had some good nights out. We did have some good nights out. I remember one bank holiday. We're down in wherever it was, and I went into a bar, and it was full of Sheffield United hooligans, and literally just ordered a drink, and someone came up to me, tapped me on the shoulder, and went, "Listen, Sheffield United are in here. I suggest you just go. Don't even have any drink." So I was like, "Okay," that was my warning. I wasn't hanging about at all. I was like, "Right, I'm off." So sobered up pretty quickly. Then that was, but we did enjoy some good nights out. In fact, there was another one, Bournemouth away. Remember Gary Megson? Mm-hmm. Gary Megson, new sub time again. He said, right, Wednesday night, Bournemouth away. They were flying near the top of the table. We were mid-table. He said, if we get something, I'll buy you all a pint afterwards. So we were all happy days. So I said to Potts, I had my stag do down in Bournemouth. I said, Potts, it's a great night. We're out. We're going out. We're out. Sedgie, we're out. Weaves, we're out. So I told a few of them, I said, we're out for after the game. Regardless of the result, we're going out. We're having a few beers. And so we drew 0-0, which was a great result. I mean, it wasn't a good game, but it was a good result. I'm sure Callum Wilson was probably there at Bournemouth. They had a good side, and I'm sure they went up. So he's bought us all a pint afterwards, and me and Potts are like looking around thinking, we've brought our gear, we're going out. We're not in our Sheffield Wednesday tracking, we're going out. So Megson and all the staff had gone to bed, and me and Potts went, right, we're going out. Who else is coming out? Everyone bottled it except me and Pottsy. So we went out, cracked on into some student bar till 3-4 in the morning, absolutely steaming. Ended up buying a vuvuzela in a kebab house. I was blowing this vuvuzela in the reception when I got back, saying, "Meg's an unused sub." I'm blowing this vuvuzela. I never got back in the team anyway. But there was no chance. Probably must have ended up the next morning. Good night.
Amazing. Have you got any more, Steve?
Yeah. So obviously we get to the end of that season, and you're going to go on and hopefully when coming towards the end of it, was the plan always to go back to Preston and then kick on, or was there ever any sort of feeling that you'd maybe elongate your stay with us, or what was the plan after Wednesday?
I had 1 year left at Preston, and Preston had changed the manager, so Ferguson had gone, and it was Phil Brown. And he got in touch with me towards the end of the season, saying that he wanted me to be a big part of the plans next season. There was a couple more clubs that were interested as well. And Gary Megson was on me in the summer saying, come on, sign for Wednesday. And I was like, Gary, you dropped me for 10 games for giving a penalty. I honestly couldn't trust that he wouldn't do it again. Whilst I really liked him by the end of the season, I just couldn't trust that if I did something bad again, he'd just leave me out of the team. And I was travelling. So I had two young kids at the time. And I was travelling 2 hours to training every day. And I'd always stay the night before a game. So I'd share a lift with Bobby over the Woodhead every day, which was fine because I'd get in early, I'd do my stretches, and it was fine. But I thought, I can't risk that, knowing that a manager could just bin me off for a silly mistake.
Yeah, fair. There was one player we had on. I don't think you played with him, but we had Raider Johnson on for a show, and he was talking about Hillsborough. Now, you know, Raider was a really popular character with the Sheffield Wednesday faithful, but he kind of went into a bit of a solemn moment, and he said, "I tell you what, though, but if that crowd don't like you, they let you bloody know about it." And he mentioned Jacques Magoma, who end up going to Birmingham City, who we've got at the weekend, actually. And he said, I think you misplaced a pass, and God Christ, that crowd can get on your back. I don't think we did it to you, Mels, but can you, you know, I probably Tommy, maybe Potts, you know what I mean?
Potts, he got it from corners every time he hit the first man. Oh, he's done it again. And but the thing was, we have to remember is Potts, he was really liked in the dressing room. So he was a team player. So for really? Us players, we were thinking, we need Potts out there because he'll do a job for us to make sure that we're functioning well. So for me, Potsy was a very, very clever player. And okay, he got a bit of stick off fans and maybe for the corners, hitting the first man. Good player. Really good player. Do you know what? Potsy will become a first-team manager. He will become a manager at a very, very good level.
Are you still in touch with any of the lads? You know, like Nicky Weaver, for example, and, you know, even DJ. I'd love to know what he's up to. Probably in an NSYNC tribute band or something.
DJ. Last time I saw him, he was playing away at Macclesfield for Northampton or someone like that. And still putting his crosses into the stand. But yeah. do you know what? When you leave the football clubs, you lose touch very quickly. Sedgie was always a close friend of mine. Weaves, yes, if I saw them now, we'd meet up and we'd have some drinks and it'd be great.
Yeah, yeah.
But lose touch. Potts is probably the only one of the few that I've kept in touch with. Clinton as well. But usually social media is the one where you keep in touch with them more.
And bear in mind, you and Clinton working at Sky now, you're probably like, well, all right, Clint, all right, Mills. Like, you know what I mean? Like, you know, you're gonna bang into each other every now and again. Have you got any more, Steve?
Yeah. So, obviously, Dan's just touched on fast forward a little bit, he's just touched on the fact that you're working for Sky and doing and I will say this, you do a great job, and it's great when we, you know, the match day review stuff that you do. Bringing it back round to Sheffield Wednesday, it's not been the best season. We're not in the greatest period after what was the Miracle of Hillsborough, and I know that Dan doesn't like that term. He doesn't like
it. It's a rubbish name. It's a rubbish name. Surely we could come up with something better than the Miracle of Hillsborough. It sounds like someone's nan's made it up.
It was a miracle. It happened at Hillsborough. It's the Miracle of Hillsborough. Anyway, as a sort of a national sort of broadcaster, are the eyes of the nation, is it there in the conscience of people outside of Sheffield? What's the sort of perception of people at the level that you're operating at in terms of your analysis of the game, or is it just something that you look at as a sort of a footnote?
What's going on at Wednesday?
No. Yeah.
I always think any promoted team are expected to struggle. I think a club the size of Wednesday would probably not be. I think the fact that Ipswich this season have been absolutely flying, you're thinking, well, why can't we be? I think when I saw the lack of recruitment in the summer and the fact that Darren Moore went, I was thinking, oh, they're going to be in for a tough season here, really tough season. And then I watched them a few times early on. I didn't see Wednesday lose when I reported. They kept drawing, which was good because they weren't losing. But it was, don't create enough, didn't score enough. Too easy to score against. And from early on in the season, I was thinking if Wednesday can stay up, that will be a great season. Now, we've still got loads of games left and there was a little bit of an upturn. It's still possible. But yeah, that's where I see Sheffield Wednesday because they're a massive football club. Obviously, things off the pitch feel as though they're not right at the moment. I speak to my brother all the time. He's a Wednesday. He still goes to the games, takes his boys as well to the games when he can. And it's frustration because Sheffield Wednesday, a huge football club, would love to be in the Premier League, of course, would love those derbies again with Sheffield United. But at this moment in time, it's to stay in the second tier of English football, which is the Championship, which between now and the end of the season, they've got an absolute job on their hands to do.
Yeah. Absolutely, they have. Now, listen, normally we do it the other way around, Mels, but I'm going to go back in time because I want to talk about the early part of your career. You know, your late teens, early 20s, stuff like that, and that season with that goal. And, I mean, hell of a hit, weren't it? I'm talking about the Arsenal one, of course. did you feel like your life changed after that one? I mean, you've absolutely slapped it from what... I'm gonna be generous here, like 35 yards out, right? In your head, that's what it is.
It was miles out, wasn't it? a great personal highlight for me because it was obviously for Liverpool. It was the last minute. It was against the champions, the Invincibles, the Arsenal team. I probably didn't know how big the goal was at the time because my mate was in Australia and he was like, oh, it's on the back pages in Australia. I was like, what? It's on the, yeah. back page in Australia. I couldn't really get my head around that. But being at Liverpool for a number of years, Liverpool are a huge football club globally, and it was nice to have a moment that I knew I was capable of. You know, I had to manage injuries from a young age anyway. but I'd always scored goals, and that was something that I loved doing. So that was a fulfillment of a dream. But I did want more of it, but unfortunately, I didn't get too much more of it. But it was a nice moment. That was a nice moment. I tell you what, I should have gone out in town afterwards, because I probably couldn't have pulled any girl that night. I went home. Yeah, yeah. I went home and watched Match of the Day 2 with my mum and dad. Having a cup of tea.
Totally worth it. Totally worth it. You're not going to get moments like you could pull a bird any other night of the week, Mel's. You know what I mean? But after that, you know, that your career kind of stunt a little bit because you had a couple of shitty injuries at this point, didn't you? Like, you know what I mean? Do you remember thinking, Christ, this could really affect me here? And it must have been a long road back.
Yeah, well even that, you mentioned that Arsenal, I had an injection to get through the game. I was injured then. You know, I had a painkilling injection just to get through that game. I had 1 year left at Liverpool, and Rafa said, right, we don't want you anymore. Didn't say it as bluntly as that. He got somebody else to say it. But so then it was like, well, my career could be over. I think I'd had four operations by that point. Mm-hmm. I'd had a really serious knee injury. It was both knees. It wasn't one knee. And so it was a case of, well, where am I going to go? So Sheffield Wednesday was one of the clubs mentioned at the time. But Preston, because I just had a baby, I was like, right, I'm going to Preston.
Down the road.
Yeah, but I signed injured. So if you're a Wednesday fan and you sign somebody injured, you're going to be like, what's going on here? I didn't play for 6 months at Preston. I had two more operations after I'd signed, but the manager knew that. He knew he was signing somebody injured. But the fans don't know that. The fans are thinking, we've signed some kid from Liverpool. Why is he not playing? Because I was injured. I had to manage the injury throughout my career. It wasn't nice. But I loved my time as a player. I loved it.
Amazing. Amazing. Have you got any more, Steve?
I was literally just going to ask, without wanting to be too somber about it coming, because you finished quite early, didn't you? I think you were only about 30 when you finally hung them up. Did you have that sort of, not FOMO, but whatever the term would be for a person who finishes as early as you, that you didn't have a more prolonged career? Or do you feel like you achieved everything that you wanted and set out to achieve?
No, I mean... I'd love to sit here and go, oh, I did this, I did that, I won this, I scored this many goals. But for me, my dream was just to be a professional football player. So to have that experience early on at Liverpool, the times at Preston, my one season at Sheffield Wednesday, even at West Ham for that brief loan spell. And it's nice to have those memories and experiences to fulfil the dream of being a professional football player. I could have been better. You know, some fans would be like, he's awful. But that's the way football is. It is about opinion. But it was nice to fulfil that dream. I'd love to have done more. But I got to experience something I wanted to do as a little boy.
Amazing. Brilliant. Amazing. So what are you feeling next then? I mean, you know, in the media career that you've got, and again, I'm going to echo Stevie, I think you're very good at it. Some people are bloody terrible. I mean, we all saw Josh Windass's dad giving it a go. That was like one of those crazy old guys in a pub going, I can't believe it, Jeff. I don't know what's happening. Like, you know what I mean? But, you know, I think you're quite measured, Mels. I quite like it. But moving forward, you know, are you eyeing up a seat on that panel with Simon Thomas on a Saturday?
I was fortunate because when I came out of the game, I was on the panel early doors in the studio. Mm. I think I've had my stint in there now. But do you know what I love doing is going to the different grounds around the country, whether it's Sheffield Wednesday. I've been fortunate to go back there a few times, even Preston or Barrow or Carlisle. Just places, it's real football. I absolutely love football in our country, whether it's the Premier League, Championship, League One, League Two, wherever it is. I just love watching football and reporting on it because that is my passion. So whilst I can remain doing that, then I'm happy.
Amazing. Amazing. Perfect. Listen, I'm going to put a pin in it there. Mels, it's been an absolute pleasure. Stay on the line. Thanks a lot for joining us. Mr. Neil Mellor.
This podcast is proud to be part of the TalkSport Fan Network. TalkSport. Powered by fans.
Johnson puts it in the air. Aidan Flegg wins the goal.
It's still with Lee Gregory. He's in the box. Tries to screw him. Is it going to be there? Yeah. Yes! Oh, my God!
The Wednesday week!
It's the 90th minute. You've got all your mates round. You've got your McNugget share boxes coming down the left wing ready to go.
Your mate's already been booked for double dipping, and you steal the last nugget, snatching all 3 points back of the net. Le Bosch. Order McDelivery now on the McDonald's app. You in? At participating restaurants, 18 plus, serving times, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com for more information. See you later.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
This podcast is proud to be part of the TalkSport Fan Network. TalkSport, powered by fans.